Well, you know, I love me a good fart joke, he said sardonically.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 354, recorded on June 25th, 2014.
To the 354th edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and the 187th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am Paul S. Novak.
I am Jordan Lund.
And I am Jonah Falcon.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry and includes gaming history.
So, so this is going to be week two of the E3 swag giveaway.
Woohoo, swag.
A lot of nice stuff.
Hooray, swag.
So anyways, what have you been playing this week? How about you, Jordan?
Not a game, actually. I lucked out and I fell into a complete set of all of the James Bond movies on Blu-ray for $73. Okay. 24 movies. It comes out to be like $3.45 a movie.
But does that include Never Say Never Again and Casino Royale?
It did not include Never Say Never Again, which I picked up on Amazon cheap, and nobody really wants Casino Royale.
The original? Why not? It's Woody Allen, David Niven, Peter Sellers.
It's terrible.
But it has the look of love. Was it the look? Wait, was it that? Was that the song that was the look of love?
I don't remember. It was a terrible movie.
Yeah, I think it was the look of love. She became a huge, huge hit.
I did find out that the original Casino Royale, the one that was done as a 50s live television show, was actually in the public domain.
And James Bond was an American in that.
James Bond was an American named Jimmy Bond.
which became the name of the character for Woody Allen in the other Casino Royale. Who apparently was the bad guy. So how about you, Paul?
I am addicted to a 3DS title called Disney's Magical World. Have I spoken about it?
Yes, last week you did.
Oh my god, I've gotten all 100 stickers and I'm craving new content, which I'm hoping comes out at the start of next month.
Oh, Nintendo.
You had to find a new obsession after the cooking game.
Oh yeah, I kind of can't deal with that.
I don't know, Nintendo and DLC, you know.
Yeah.
There's a problem there.
Hey, they released the Easter content in time.
Okay.
And you know, unfortunately, their production timeline just has their Easter stuff running until the end of this month. So I
have to admit, too, I did pick up Rasogun for the PS4 on the strength, believe it or not, of the ship construction kit. It's basically a Defender clone. If you've ever played Defender, that's exactly how Rasogun works, with bigger explosions. Bigger explosions, but they have the ability to make your own ship, which is kind of cool. And you can download ships that other people have made. It's really kind of neat.
How about this?
Crazy Harry plays with explosives.
Please remember that you are in my ear when you do things like that.
I wonder if anybody realizes that Crazy Harry was a terrorist.
Crazy Harry was a terrorist. Yes, that's absolutely correct.
If you'll notice, he has not been in the latest incarnations of that franchise.
That's true, but the Muppet movie is still awesome.
And then on the tick, you had the Mad Midnight Bomber, What Bombs at Midnight.
What Bombs at Midnight.
The Mad Midnight Bomber, What Bombs at Midnight.
You know, for a moment, I think you said the Mad Men Bomber. It's like, what is are they throwing bombs from
oh, there are just two-page spreads everywhere.
That's the super secret ending of Mad Men, Jonah. You just spoiled it for everyone.
You know.
Is that show over yet?
There's a half a season to go.
You know, I completely drew a blank on the name of the company and the main character and
Don Draper.
Don Draper, right? John Hamm. It's just it just blanked from my brain all of a sudden. It's like it didn't want to come out.
Well, old age will do that to you.
One of the leading fan theories is that he's going to turn into D.B. Cooper.
I would rather see them go into the 70s and be hopped up on drugs and burned out in the 80s.
That would be fun. That would be fun.
Exhausting.
That would be fun to revisit Mad Men in 20 years and do an 80s era Mad Men.
Yes, because we need
the
more.
The worst, do a modern day Mad Men and point out how advertising has basically suffered a slow death with the, you know, television's dying, print is dying.
Well, you also have viral marketing is where it's at right now. Viral marketing is where it's at. You know?
Yes.
I can neither confirm nor deny.
Okay.
The problem with viral marketing is that it's notoriously unreliable.
Yes, it's very hit and miss.
I can neither confirm nor deny.
Okay. As for me, I've just been playing Lords of Waterdeep on my iPad. I haven't been really doing anything else, you know? And I think it's just because I want something quick, something, you know, a board game that doesn't require people.
Well, you've always been a bit antisocial, haven't you?
No. I went to a board game group 2 days ago, and I played some games there. But I'm talking about just my computer gaming. You know, I want to lay down in bed and play some Lords of Waterdeep and fall asleep. You know, that sort of thing. It's just too much work right now to just actually play games on an Xbox One or a PC. So.
Well, to be honest, I've been mostly playing The Great Job Hunt, starring Paul Novak.
Huh. I'm going to be doing The Great Job Hunt by Jonah, who wants to ditch his current job and move on. And I don't care if you're listening. Anyways, we're going to move on to game news. Take it away, Jordan.
Game news, Nintendo loses Wii patent lawsuit to Philips. This comes to us from The Motley Fool. Nintendo lost a case against Dutch conglomerate, Koninkje
or something like that. It's a very Scandinavian name.
Nintendo lost a case against Dutch conglomerate Philips last Friday with a U.S. UK court ruling that it infringed on two of Philips' patents in its Wii and Wii U consoles. The two disputed patents cover motion control and wireless devices that can be controlled by a second device. Products that are in violation of the first patent include the Wii, Wii Mini, Wii Remote, Remote Plus, Nunchuck, Balance Board, Wii U, Wii U Gamepad, and Wii U Motion Plus. The Wii U and GamePad violated the second patent. However, the court ruled that Nintendo did not infringe on a third patent, which covered modeling a user in a virtual environment. In addition to the UK, Philips has filed patent litigation against Nintendo in the US, France, and Germany. The final damages won't be known until next month, but Philips' initial demand was that Nintendo halt sales of all products that had infringed upon its patents. Nintendo intends to appeal the decision. The ruling comes at a time when Nintendo's Wii U sales are accelerating in the UK, thanks to Mario Kart 8, which has already sold 1.4 million copies worldwide since launching at the end of May. At the beginning of June, weekly sales of the Wii U in the UK surged 666%, thanks to the launch of Mario Kart 8 Wii U bundle.
Proof that it's of the devil. See, right there.
It's unlikely that Philips actually wants Nintendo to halt sales of all Wii U consoles and their peripherals. Instead, Philips will likely force Nintendo to agree to a royalty settlement. Nintendo has sold approximately 895 million Wii games and 32 million Wii U games sold globally. Nintendo could pay up to $148 million in software royalties. For hardware, the rate could be much higher. Panasonic, Philips, and Sony earn $9 in royalties split three ways for each Blu-ray player sold. If Philips applies a similar rate to the 101 million Wiis and 6.3 million Wii Us sold so far, it would translate to nearly $966 million in back royalties. Nintendo's bottom line simply cannot withstand over $1.1 billion in royalty payments to Philips.
It goes on and on, but yeah, we actually discussed this like a couple of weeks ago, and we were doubtful that Philips would win this suit, but apparently they have.
Apparently they have. From what I recall, they actually threw out that third patent completely, saying that it was not enforceable. So
yeah, but you know who really used the body mapping.
Yeah, the fake body mapping that the Wii did.
Go ahead, Paul.
Well, there's still the room for Nintendo to appeal. It would be my first point. So we'll just see how it plays out. I'm still hopeful for Nintendo because I find it very suspect that Philips wouldn't raise any objections until a second console is released using this technology. It's just my own personal opinion. And secondly, are these numbers based strictly on United Kingdom sales?
Would damages be
awarded here, in America as well?
It only applies to the UK right now. But if Philips is successful in U.S., France, and Germany, that will cover a huge bulk of the numbers that they had sold already. You know, so this is extrapolating that Phillips will also win this case in the end. And the thing is that when this kind of case is won in one country, usually the others fall in line. So
that's correct. Yeah.
So
they use this first case as precedent to say, well, here's what the ruling in the UK was.
Now, the other thing is that you may wonder, why would they do it now? Well, I imagine that they waited until they saw how much the Wii U's were selling because they probably were watching how many Wii's were being sold, right? And they're just seeing how many. You know, it's sort of like a timing game, you know? It's like, now is a good time to do it.
Maximize the buck.
I don't know. If the decision were left up to me, behavior like that would show me that, well, they really didn't violate anything, because otherwise you would have acted a little faster than that.
Well, they also have to generate a case, too. They have to... You know, they just can't all of a sudden say, hey, this technology mimicked ours. You know, they have
legal wheels turn very slowly.
Yeah.
Yeah. When did they first file paperwork, though? It would have had to have, you know, to
maybe
me,
the second
it would
year
have had
of
to
Wii.
Have been at least 5 years
they
ago.
They would have had to like they would have had to start researching it internally to determine which of their many patents Nintendo was violating. And that of itself would take just a couple of years. And then you'd have to start the legal paperwork.
Yeah. If it were me, I would need to see. You know, I would need to see them starting in a relevant time frame, not, oh, it's 2014.
Well, you can't rush this, you know.
I'm just saying, the
thing that I find curious about the whole thing, and we mentioned this on the last podcast, is that the idea of body mapping onto a television screen really fits more what the Kinect and the PlayStation camera do than the Wii. So I'm not quite sure why they were focusing on Nintendo for all of this, other than, you know, deep pockets and having sold 100 million consoles and so on and so forth.
I think
but the technology that Nintendo uses for the Wii and Wii U is the same technology that they used, you know, back in the Power Glove days.
Not really, no. It was actually a different technology. It wasn't the same technology.
The Wii and the Wii U is infrared.
You know, I mean, the Power Glove is 1989 technology. I'm pretty sure in the following 17 years they found something, you know, a little more advanced than that.
Well, no, I've studied this case, and I'm telling you that these technologies are remarkably similar, which is probably why Nintendo went to market with it in the first place.
Okay, let me ask you.
They haven't changed technologically very much since the Power Glove.
Okay, so let's say the worst case scenario happens and Nintendo is forced to start paying $1.1 billion in royalty payments. Jordan?
They've got the cash to do it. I mean, if they needed to turn around and pay $1 billion, they could do that. Nintendo has tons of money in the bank. That a $1 billion hit wouldn't impact them at all. Where they would be hurt is going forward, selling the Wii U, they wouldn't necessarily be able to do an immediate price cut the way they need to do things like that. And that would end up hurting them worse than the $1 billion.
Now, we have to look at the other side of this as well, and that Philips desperately needs this. They have been losing money hand over fist the past few years. According to this, their healthcare and lighting and their healthcare revenue, which accounts for 41% of Philips' top line, which reminds me of, by the way, Sony and its and its insurance. You know, their biggest income, which is healthcare revenue, fell 4% in the past year, and the lighting division, which accounted for 36% of its top line, plateaued. So Philips desperately needs this, because their company is plateauing and maybe on the downward trend, you know. So we're going to move on to the next item.
PlayStation Now Beta gets 6 new games, but those high prices remain. And this comes to us from VG247. PlayStation Now has received 6 new games as part of North America's ongoing beta test. But despite claims from gamers that Sony's rental prices are too high, costs still haven't gone down. The service has been updated with the following games: Catherine, Darksiders, Resident Evil Code Veronica X. That's clumsy. Ben 10 Omniverse 2, Dead Rising 2 Off the Record, and Saints Row 2. Sony has reminded gamers at several junctures that the PS Now pricing is not final, so it can change. They do seem steep, given that just last week you can buy a used copy of Code Veronica on the PS2 for $5. Paying $3 to rent it for just 4 hours seems a bit steep.
Yeah, I mean, Saints Row is $3 for 4 hours and $15 for 90 days, but you can find that for $2 used and $3 new in any GameStop, really. You know, and the Ben 10 is, you know, is $30 for 90 days. I, you know, the other news, which was not really that big a news, in which it said that Sony was literally dancing in the aisles when they found out the Xbox One was going to cost $500. This is way too high for their service. Now, fortunately, they're getting their feedback now before it actually moves forward. Although, can you really call it a beta if people are paying for the rentals?
That was the number one question among the beta group, is if we're beta testing this, do we have to pay these prices? And the answer was, yes, you do.
I mean, you know,
I looked at the list of games. There's a list of, I don't know, 15 or 20 different games. I could probably provide it. We can put it in the notes for the podcast. But realistically, there's only a couple of games that are worth buying if you've never bought them. Crazy Taxi being one. Sonic CD being another one.
$5 on XBLA and PSN.
Exactly, and that's the problem, is that the 4 hour they break the rental down into a couple of different categories. You have a 4 hour rental,
a week rental, a month rental,
and a 90 day rental. Yeah. The cost of the 90 day rental is between $10 and $20 more than just buying the game, brand new, right? It's far, far more expensive than buying a used copy. So they really need to figure out the pricing, because. Or allow an a la carte option where you pay a monthly fee and it's like Netflix and you can play whatever you want. That's what they need to do.
That makes better sense. If you get PSN Plus, then, you know, you just get these games, you know, for free. It makes no other sense, because, you know, who's going to pay $3 to play 4 hours of Catherine? It's a puzzle game, you know, and some of those puzzles are damn hard, you know, and you can get Catherine for $10 new, you know. I don't know. But like I said, this quote-unquote beta, at least they're getting the if they find that no one's paying for these things, because remember, companies will sell for what people are willing to pay, you know, and if people start paying these prices, well, then guess what? It's your fault. You decided to pay that price. Paul?
Well, my personal opinion on paid beta structures aside, you know, you really kind of can't blame Sony for trying to figure out where the next point in the market is going to be. With all of these, with all their consumer bases being trained on free-to-play games, you know, their companies really are trying to find the next correct pricing model. So I kind of don't fault them, but I don't really think that this one is it.
I can fault
and
them.
I kind of think that they realize that too.
I can fault them. All they do is look at GameStop and see what people are paying for games that they keep forever. You know?
You can fault them for trying something different?
No, I can fault them for their pricing structure. And that's what this is all about. I mean, no one is saying that this is a bad idea, you know, to have a rental service for games. You know, sort of like I forgot the name of that service as well. My brain is just on
Gamefly.
No, not Gamefly. The streaming service. You know what I'm talking about.
On Live,
yeah. It's sort of like On Live, you know, except not with new games, but used games. You know, I mean, it's a good idea, but seriously, I mean, you know, like I said, $3 for 4 hours for something like Saints Row 2 is ridiculous. I mean, that's an open world game. 4 hours you can spend doing just three missions.
Right, but they're trying to take a microtransaction business model that is so popular on Facebook and mobile gaming and bring it over to a console space.
I get that.
So you can't you can't really blame the thought behind it, but in practice, it doesn't seem to be working out as well as anybody would like.
Isn't that model to give the game free and then apportion you, what's it called, allow people to speed up the game by buying, say, potions or coins or whatever for a certain amount of money? I mean, this is different. This is rental, you know? And if you can buy something cheaper for what you can rent, then there's no point in renting.
And not just cheaper, but significantly cheaper, right? There were games in there that had a 90-day rental price of $29.99 for a game you can buy between $10 and $20.
Yeah,
that's the part that kind of throws me off. And I would think that if they were really had their druthers, that Sony would put in an additional, like, buy-up option. So, for example, like, if the game is going retail for $20, it's like, well, by the time you've rented it for a month, if you've already spent $10, you know, it should say, hey, your subscription to this game is running out, but for another $10, you can have it forever.
You know, Microsoft had the same criticism leveled against it with Xbox Originals too, if you remember. You know, they would be selling games that were for $30 on Xbox Live, which people could buy for $15 at GameStop. You know, it's just,
well, that's true. The online pricing for games typically has been the manufacturer's suggested retail price as opposed to the actual retail price or the used price.
But you can't really
that's been the problem
either, though. I mean, this is not MSRP.
That's true. Yeah.
So anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Crytek claims it's doing fine despite rumors, and this comes to us from Rock Paper Shotgun. Crytek is currently working on a decent-looking Homefront sequel, a co-op Monster Mash Hunt, The Horrors of the Gilded Age, and a fairy tale MOBA, Arena of Fate. All of that would seem to bode well, except the goings-on behind the scenes are, according to a series of rumors, not so rosy. Crytek has categorically denied them, but questions still remain. I'm having Team Bondi flashbacks right now. Kotaku and German publication GameStar provided the bulk of the rumors, each with anonymous sources declaring that different portions of the sky are falling. Crucially, employees from Crytek's UK offices have allegedly contacted publications with reports of payment troubles, missing bonuses, some employees not getting paid for a month since March. Before E3, a Eurogamer source also claimed similar alleging... What? Before E3, a Eurogamer source also claimed similar claims. I'm going to have to put that word in because whoever did this does not know how to write, alleging that Crytek's Sofia office in Bulgaria hadn't received salaries for 2 months. A GameStar source went so far as to claim that they'd been close to declaring bankruptcy but had secured more funding. Crytek issued a statement in response, reading, "Regardless of what some media reporting, mostly based on a recent article published by GameStar, the information in these reports and in the GameStar article itself are rumors which Crytek deny." That's not good English. But then again, Crytek is not an English speaking company. "We continue to focus on the development of publishing our upcoming titles, Homefront the Revolution, Hunt, Horrors of the Gilded Age, Arena of Fate, and Warface, as well as providing ongoing support for our CryEngine and its licensees. We have received a lot of positive feedback during and after E3, blah, blah, blah. We don't care what happened at E3. We don't care about how loyal your employees and fans are. The problem is what's going on behind the scenes. New rumors have Crytek negotiating with World of Tanks creator Wargaming and an unnamed Chinese company. I would guess Tencent, maybe. So, like I said, this is starting to remind me of Team Bondi. Remember that entire fiasco with L.A. Noire and, you know, reports of abuse? You know, in this case, Paul, if you hadn't gotten paid for 2 months while working at a software company, how steamed would you be?
You know, I think somewhere around the 3 week mark, my supervisor and I might have a few things to talk about.
Yeah. So now, while Crytek is denying all this, you know the old saying, where there's smoke, there's fire.
Right. And, you know, there's also been a minor exodus of employees out of the company. Right. I have heard rumors that, excuse me. They had there had been plans to work on a sequel to Rise on the Xbox One. That has now been shuttered. So, you know, I think they're in trouble. You know, it's one of those things where they can pretend that everything's going along smoothly. But when the rumor isn't that, hey, there's trouble. The rumor is, hey, our people aren't being paid. That edges over into, you know, the same kind of trouble that Interplay had, where they weren't paying their employees, they weren't paying their employees' payroll taxes, and so on and so
forth.
So,
but here's the thing: is that Crytek has made some critically acclaimed games, but they never sell. Part of it is because, you know, for a long time they just dealt with PC, and you know that's not a good idea when you're creating really, really, really advanced graphics and developing a graphic engine and all that just for PC. Then they branched out into the 360 and PS3, you know, with Crysis 2, but even that didn't sell very well. Crysis 3 tanked, you know. So Crytek having monetary issues is not surprising to me. I mean, Rise got made because Microsoft was backing that, you know. And you know, I wonder about making a sequel to Homefront, by the way, because Homefront was just dreadful. I mean, I know that Crytek has the chops to carry it off, but that IP is so toxic. It's you know.
Well, the two companies that made it aren't around anymore. No. They're gone. Crytek bought the IP, and I think taking the setting and putting it in Philadelphia so they can really play up the Patriot angle will work for them.
You know
if
what?
They can live long enough to get it out the door.
But here's the thing. You know, they also bought the development company, I think it was Arkane, who did Time Splitters. And they're sitting on that IP. And Time Splitters is an IP that everybody wants to see. And you have to wonder why Crytek is sitting on it.
Maybe they don't have enough people coming to work because they can't pay them.
No, we're not talking about then.
Maybe.
You know, because the people from the development studio who did Time Splitters, you know, got excited because they thought maybe Crytek bought them so that they could make a new Time Splitters game. And you know, that's of the IPs. You know, that's one of the top ones that people want to see happen again.
Well, you know, when it comes to business decisions like that, it's like perhaps you know a great number of people want to see another entry into the Time Splitter franchise. But they really, as a company, have to weigh which one will be more profitable. Do they think they can get another title out using those same amount of resources faster or cheaper, and then could then therefore use the capital that raised to go back and do Time Splitters? Do they think there's perhaps more interest in another one of the IPs that they just bought? And you know, especially since we're not talking about them currently working or putting on hold another Time Splitter, you know, my thought would have to be that, yes, that's exactly the case.
By the way, it was Free Radical that was bought. Now they're called Crytek UK, which is the company that is complaining about not getting paid right now. So there you go.
And the rumors could be rather legitimate. We don't know. But I'm always weary whenever anybody has sources that they can't cite.
Well,
always a little weary, but in a while, I've had my butt bitten on those.
When the anonymous sources happen to be the employees themselves, then I'm more willing to believe it because employees don't want their names attached to it because it's going to hurt their future, you know. But on the other hand, they have to tell people what's going on because, you know, they're getting screwed, but they can't have their names out there or else they'll never find work again. So employees who anonymously say, we're not getting paid, that's something you usually pay attention to because that's their only, that's their only recourse is to complain to the media anonymously.
I tend to agree. The rule of thumb that I stick with is that if the anonymous source is saying things that is unreasonably happy, generally that's false. Yay, Half-Life 3 confirmed. If the anonymous source is saying things that are generally negative, chances are it's true.
Well, it isn't that if it's negative, it's true. I'm just saying when you have people, anonymous people saying we're not getting paid, I'm willing to believe they're not getting paid, you know.
I agree. Yeah.
I mean,
why else would they say they're not being paid, right?
And they can't give their real names because, Paul, if you complain that you weren't getting paid and you were working for Disney and Disney, what's it called, found out, what would happen to you? You'd get fired and then other companies would say, well, this guy is a complainer. We're not going to hire him.
Well, right. That was exactly my point. Yeah. I believe that I said, you know, normally I'm skeptical
right. Okay.
when I hear unsighted sources. However, You know, is that not what I said? That's what I meant to say.
I believe that's exactly what you said. I agree completely.
I think that's what you're implying.
However, when it's, you know, when it's bad news, you might want to listen a little more closely.
Yeah, I mean, well, here's the thing, is that a disgruntled employee, you know, will say other things other than...
That's true. So there is still reason to be fairly skeptical.
No, I'm saying all disgruntled in that they were kicked off because they were jerks, right? They will say things like that. But usually they won't say we didn't get paid because that's easily verifiable because other employees will say, no, we're getting paid. Notice that there are no employees saying, oh, we got paid. You know, so that's another reason why I'm willing to believe that people aren't getting paid. Now, that said, payment delays in software development is very common. I know, I'm pretty sure Paul knows this too.
I wouldn't say very common.
Well, common enough.
I would say not unheard of for, especially if you're on a startup that's doing their first project. I mean, oftentimes people will work, you know, will go to work understanding that, you know, it's a profit sharing kind of venture, for example.
Or they for the royalties.
Or right. they'll delay bonuses. It's not unusual to delay bonuses. It's kind of unusual to delay base pay unless, like Paul says, that's something you agree to going in.
Now, it also bears repeating that video games don't just fall out of the sky. You know, people make these things. And even if the general public is only aware of major names, there are individuals back there that still have to pay, you know, rent and their lighting bills that, you know, require these paychecks. So just tossing that out there every chance I can.
Right. Now, Jordan, you played Rise, right?
No, I did not.
Oh, you didn't? Oh, okay. Because I was going to ask you if after playing Rise, you'd like to see a Rise 2, because Rise is a surprise hit for the Xbox One. You know, and which is straight because it's a Dynasty Warriors game with a few QuickTime events added, you know, basically a tech demo. But I think a lot of people were interested in Arise 2. So it's sort of surprising to me that Crytek wouldn't, you know, unless Microsoft is the one who said no. So they probably had their reasons, you know.
The idea of a Rise game that is not a retrofitted Kinect game, I think, would appeal to me.
It isn't a retrofitted game, though.
It was originally supposed to be a Kinect exclusive.
A first-person brawler. The game itself is Dynasty Warriors.
Right.
So it's not like, all of a sudden, instead of using the Kinect, you're using a controller. In this case, it's the game was completely revamped, you know, for whatever reason. Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Take it away, Jordan.
Oddworld New and Tasty heading to Xbox One with ID at Xbox. This comes to us from Polygon. Oddworld New and Tasty will launch for Xbox One with Microsoft's indie self-publishing program ID at Xbox. Oddworld Inhabitants announced via the game's website. The 2.5D side-scrolling puzzle platformer is a remake of 1997's Oddworld's Abe's Odyssey. Speaking with Eurogamer creator Lauren Lanning explained that the Xbox One edition of the game will come after the Steam and PlayStation ports. Quote, as soon as we get our obligations on the PS platforms out, our intention is to get rolling on the Xbox platform and really treat it with the same level of care, Lanning said. We don't have a release date, but we know it'll be before the end of the year. The game will not be released on Xbox 360 as the ID at Xbox program only applies to the Xbox One titles. New and Tasty is already slated to launch on PlayStation 3, PlayStation 4, and PlayStation Vita as a cross-buy and a cross-save title. As well as Linux, Mac, Wii U, and Windows PC, the PS4 launch is set for July 22nd.
I want to ask you a question. Remember a couple of months ago when Lauren Lanning said he would never, 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 ever release another game on a Microsoft console?
Right. Yeah, I do remember that. And that was before the ID at Xbox thing changed it all.
So, you know, it's fun. And Hello Games also criticized Microsoft heavily, and then Joe Danger 2 came out. What it tells me is that, you know, people are willing, software developers are very willing to overlook things if you stroke their hair and say, okay, we'll do what you want.
Well, exactly. And in this case, we'll do what you want means we don't care about launch parity anymore. Go ahead and put it out on the other platforms first, then bring it to Xbox. As long as it gets to Xbox in some way, shape, or form, we don't care. And that's exactly the way it should have worked all along.
Well, actually, you know, I think Sony does have a paid limited time exclusivity, I think it's not that he couldn't, he's just, he can't. But then again, you know, extra polish usually means that they'll have a special edition. Because you know what happens? Every time a new a game comes out for a new platform, 6 months after it's been released or a year after it's been released, and they did this with some of the Joe Danger games, they'll have a special edition with extra content because they were able to work on it longer. You know, sort of like a, we apologize for this coming late on your console, so here's a few gifts on it, you know.
Game of the Year edition, right?
Yeah. But, Paul, will you be getting this for the Wii U?
Probably not.
Okay.
I have to say, Paul, if you've never played Oddworld, Oddworld back in the day on the PlayStation 1 was a fantastic game. Great game.
I thought it was.
I highly recommend it.
And then they had the Xbox exclusive. Which one was it? Was it Abe's Odyssey? Yeah, it was Abe's Odyssey.
There was Abe's Odyssey, and then there was the other one, the third one that I can't remember the name of.
Oh, that was the one in which was basically a shooter with that guy.
The one that was basically a shooter with that guy. Yeah, exactly. That game.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I played that game so many times. Yeah. I played the hell out of that game.
Munches. I'm trying to remember now. Munches Odyssey.
No, Munches Odyssey was.
Oh, it was Munches Odyssey. Yeah. It was Munches Odyssey.
Munch's Odyssey was the first one.
Really? But that was the third game
had a different character. It wasn't Munch. It was another character.
Oh. I'm gonna have to look this up. Stranger's Wrath. That's right.
Stranger's Wrath. That's it. That one has also been reworked and re-released.
Yeah.
Or in the process of reworking.
The unfortunate thing about Oddworld was it never sold well, even though it got tons and tons of awards.
Yeah, it's a platformer. It's a side-scrolling platformer, but it's a puzzle platformer. It is a puzzle platformer, and it's really, really a very good game. I highly recommend it.
It's also one of the most surreal, unusual, and visually striking games, which is why I suggested it for you, Paul, if you haven't played it. So
with fart jokes.
Well, you know, I love me a good fart joke, he said sardonically.
Well, if it's done well. I mean, South Park, The Stick of Truth did it well. As a matter of fact, it's an attack. Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Take it away, Paul. Google.
Are we sure this last article is not an Onion article? Are we 100% sure of this?
No, it's a real one. It's a real one. It's been reported by multiple sites.
This isn't
a holdover from April.
It was released today.
Google announces virtual reality app Cardboard, and this comes to us from GameSpot. Google has announced its foray into the smartphone virtual reality space with an app named Cardboard. The app is described as, quote, no-frills enclosure that transforms a phone into a basic VR headset, end quote. Google has also released instructions on how to build a virtual reality viewer to use with the smartphone app. The viewer is constituted primarily of everyday items, including cardboard lenses, magnets, Velcro, a rubber band, and an optional stick NFC tag. Released with the app is the accompanying open software toolkit, as well as a tutorial on how to start coding. Android phones must be running Android 4.2, Jelly Bean, in order to support Cardboard.
I just posted a picture of the actual Cardboard that you have to use in order to use it. Like I said, this might seem like an April Fool's thing that you might find on Tech Geek or something, but it's actually real. it says all that stuff, right? But you do just need this special Cardboard folder. And, you know, it's interesting. I own a Galaxy S2. So I don't know if it uses 4.2. It probably does. But I know I have to get a Galaxy S5, you know, upgrade. So
I'm still on Froyo.
So Froyo, is that an actual?
Yeah, Android Froyo. It's like 2.1.
Oh, really? So, Jordan, you see the picture?
I do.
Yes. Yeah, so go ahead and comment.
It's exactly what I thought it would be. It's a cardboard holder for a phone.
Yeah. I mean, it's. I have to wonder, how.
Why we're reporting on something like this?
I have to wonder how it is. You know, how the how good, quote unquote, the I wonder if it is a gag, but it's a very elaborate gag because...
It's a very elaborate gag, and it's entirely the wrong time of year for this, so...
But it's not,
I don't know what to think.
It's not a fake item, though. I know. The thing is that the Android comes with a single phone camera, right?
Mm-hmm.
So how do you do virtual reality that way?
Right.
I'm sorry, I called bullshit.
It's not...
I mean, it took me a whole 3 minutes, but I can't not call it anymore.
Well, here's the thing is actually all you really need to do VR is to have two images running side by side.
I have a 3D
and separated by
the thought. Yeah.
But here's the thing is that the real thing behind this is that they're boasting PC level quality graphics. And I think that's the real, you know, that's the real thing behind this is that they have a new graphics tech which allows for quote unquote virtual reality. You know, even if it is no frills.
Well, in many cases, your iPhone screen is at a much higher resolution than your PC screen.
Okay. Explain, please.
He's talking about dots per inch. It's a higher resolution
I know,
dots
I'm just,
per inch than
okay.
your PC screen.
I just wanted Paul to explain it.
Well, no, it's deceptive because to get an image to be the proper size on, you know, to be an inch on your iPhone screen, let's say... You know, you have to get it to be about 5 inches on your computer monitor. Things like that would throw you in game development all the time because you think it's going to be big enough, and then you go and put it on, you know, you go and test the asset on the phone, and it's like, oh, we need to make that bigger.
Yeah. You know, looking at it from one angle, it looks like the Prince of the Universe from Katamari Damacy. You know,
I could see people cut, you know, creating custom paper craft stickers and stuff to
well,
customize
fortunately, they
their
actually
cardboard.
Send this cardboard so that you don't have to do that, you know. And yeah. Cardboard is sturdier. I'm gonna do it, and I'm gonna report next week, and let you guys
you
know,
do that, Jonah,
and find
you
out. You know,
I'm just wondering how long it's gonna take before somebody inevitably turns this to porn. You know, it's only a matter of time. The clock has already started ticking. Yeah.
No, I mean, they already had porn when the Kinect was first announced, remember? And also, you know, it's the term is not Rule 34. It's something else. It's something's law. And I forgot which one it is, but it says that every technology eventually has applications in porn. So, anyways, we're going to move on to listener feedback. Now, remember, we do have the swag bag giveaway. So some of their answers are related to that. So let's see. That was... You, Jordan, right? No, wait. Who did the last one?
I think that was Paul who did the last one.
Oh,
so this is you, listener feedback.
Okay, from Paul Pretke. Hey, guys. I missed last week's comments, so let me just add I did indeed remove the PS4 camera plastic covers, and it works well with other games and apps such as Playroom. Just Dance 2014 looks like it has not been tested optimized at all as far as tracking is concerned on the PS4. Shame on me for getting it without researching it enough. Now, what were we discussing about removing the plastic PS4 camera plastic covers?
I have no idea.
I have no recollection of the events of that day.
Well, Jordan, you own a PS4. What are the plastic covers then?
Not that I recall.
I don't have the camera, so it looks like that's what he's talking about, the PS4
okay.
camera.
Add PS4 Expone attach rates. I mentioned it last time, but I will say it again. I try to buy as many physical copies of games as possible, especially
good
when it comes
for you, sir. Good for you.
Especially when it comes to big titles. I almost misread that as a different word.
Get your mind out of the gutter.
You have a dirty mind, Jonah.
I did not buy a single digital PS4 game, not including the PS Plus free downloads. However, on the other hand, I only have 2 or 3 boxed Vita games, and I would say this is mostly caused by the fact that the majority of games on that platform didn't come in boxes and are only available digitally. I suppose that publishers want to convince the public that going all digital is the way to go, and showing stats like that is one way to do it. Still, I don't think that it'll work just yet. As far as I know, the internet availability is not that good in the USA, and a lot of users have data caps, which is a showstopper when it comes to games that require 10 gigabytes plus of download, including the obligatory day one patch. I also, as I previously mentioned, no one can take away your physical copy, except for a thief, obviously, or a disgruntled family member, I would imagine. But it is possible that the servers that you downloaded the game from will not work at a certain point in the future. Bah, it's even certain that this will be the case. Yeah, because you'll find games vanishing, say, from Xbox Live Arcade when the licenses run out, which is why you can't get Lost Cities anymore on Xbox Live Arcade.
Or, you know, they will just shut down the Xbox Live completely as they did for the original Xbox.
We're not talking about a multiplayer game. We're talking about actual games here.
Well, what I'm talking about is being able to download content. If you had download content for the Xbox One that you did not avail yourself of, too bad for you. It's not out there anymore. Hard the knocks. Original Xbox, not the Xbox One. Sorry, I got confused.
Well, fortunately, you know, on my original Xbox, I still have that DLC for Star Wars The Old Republic, which will remain there.
There you go.
You know, as much as people go back to the PS1, original Xbox, or PS2 and play the older games, because they're still in the boxes, if people in the future want to do the same with PS4 and Xbox One games, then they must not rely on digital distribution methods.
It's okay, Jonah. You can say the word Xbone. It's not going to hurt
you. I said Xbone in the beginning. It's just that I'm just looking at Xbox One. I guess that's why they're releasing the Halo 1 through 4 collection for the Xbox One.
Right, to have all five Halo games on the same platform.
At E3, even though I'm not eligible for the giveaway, what if I gave you a U.S. address? Well, that could work, actually. By the way I'm doing it is completely random. So let me just say a few words about what I read and watched about E3. I went through all the briefings, including the parts of the Nintendo Digital event. I really liked the emphasis that Microsoft put on games, including indie titles, and you could tell they learned a lesson from last year's performance, staying away from
Xbox is the new water cooler.
Staying away from the entertainment qualities of the new console. Wait, last year, all I remember is the $500 price. And
last year's E3, they weren't talking about the entertainment. I think people got that confused with their press event from the February previous. Right. It was all TV, TV, TV. That was not their E3 conference.
TV, TV, TV. But Xbox TV. Is.
The sports. I will TV, admit TV. This, though.
Call of Duty, Call of Duty. Call of
I
Duty.
Use most of my Xbox One as my home entertainment center now, TV, NFL, and all that stuff, and YouTube. So it did work on that level. The problem is that at the beginning of any console cycle, you're waiting for the games. And Watch Dogs right. turned out to be a big turd, and I'm probably going to trade it in for GameStop credit.
I didn't even pick up Watch Dogs.
And that was the game that you were excited for the PS4.
I was very excited for Watch Dogs, and then they ended up releasing it as a GIMPed version. And the PC version, did you hear the scandal on the PC version? That was fascinating.
Go ahead. I mean, we have plenty of time.
So apparently the PC version of Watch Dogs, remember how at E3 2012, everyone was aghast at how good it looked and so on and so forth, and then they downgraded it for release. All of those upgraded assets are actually in the game and unlockable if you modify some files. And someone on the internet figured this out and immediately released a mod patch for Watch Dogs. It requires no addition to the game whatsoever, and it looks like E3 2012.
But does it require better system? It has to use
no,
better system.
No, it actually runs better than the stock Watch Dogs because the stock Watch Dogs code is not optimized, and the code they turned off was optimized.
I don't understand how that could be possible unless
they ran out of budget.
The content is already there, so it's not the budget. Unless they wanted something that was uniform across console and PC.
That's so the working theory, is that they gimped it intentionally so that the PC would not be head and shoulders above the consoles.
That makes no sense. I mean, Rockstar is releasing Grand Theft Auto 5 on the PC, and they're going to, shine it to take advantage of the full capabilities of the hardware. I don't understand that.
If you have the PC version of Watch Dogs, take a look around for that mod, and I think you will be very impressed with what the end result is. A lot of the conspiracy theorists are throwing around the idea that somebody paid them off to make it look worse and so on and so forth. I don't believe that's necessarily the case.
That would make no sense whatsoever.
But the idea that just tweaking a couple of system files and bang, you have the full-blown version is fascinating to me.
Because if the PC and consoles are real competition, then why was I able to play a lot of PSN exclusives on Steam?
Right.
You know, like Horde what was the name of the PlayStation's version of Gravity Wars?
Super Stardust.
I have Super Stardust, and I enjoyed it on my Steam account because, I couldn't play it on Xbox. Well, I'll play it on Steam,
So. WrestleGun is actually done by the people who did Super Stardust.
Yeah, I know. There was a big deal about it like 2 years ago or 1 year ago with WrestleGun. I mean, it looks nice. Anyway, going back to Pal Pretke's, where would I left off? Okay. I really like the emphasis Microsoft put on games. Yeah, I already said that. I'm not going to play any of the exclusive games they showed. I'm not getting an Xbox One, but Sunset Overdrive looked fun, and I wouldn't mind giving it a go. That sounds so Austin Powers there. I wouldn't mind giving it a go. So I'm willing to bet you a year from now, Sunset Overdrive will hit PC. You know, I'm still annoyed that they removed Xbox Live from PC. That made no sense to me. I was extremely excited about the Grim Fandango announcement. I love those old adventure games and played most of the Scum titles. By the way, that's spelled S-C-U-M-M. And that was an engine that LucasArts used for a lot of their adventure games. But Grim Fandango was the first one to do it in 3D, you know, with 3D graphics. But I somehow missed Grim Fandango. Shame on you. When I tried going back to it a few years ago, I had to jump through those hoops you mentioned while running old games on Windows 7, and there was no sound, so I decided to give it up. Having the game on the Vita is amazing, and is a great follow-up to the recent release of Broken Sword 5. And if they are really working on a sequel to Grim Fandango, that's even more exciting. Now, I did mention, I did respond to him on the on gaming podcast. The software that I use, which is perfect for it, is called Residual VM, and you can get it at residualvm.org, and it works amazingly well. As a matter of fact, I'll probably start playing another round of Grim Fandango in like a couple of days, because Grim Fandango to me is like a very nice graphic novel, you know, and I enjoy reading it, quote unquote, every so often. And even though it's just a single story, it's that good. Have either of you played Grim Fandango?
I own the PC version, and I've never been able to get it to run. So.
Okay, well, go to gamingpodcast.net and click on the link residualvm.org. It'll run on Windows 7 perfectly with it.
Okay, I'll have to give that a try.
How about you, Paul? Did you play Grim Fandango?
No, I also missed out on this one, and I think that, you know, back in the day when it was available, I mean, there were always IDA. Games of... Yeah, there were always games available at Costco for like $10, and and that's where I did a lot of my PC gaming was, you know, the budget titles from Costco, and it was just like the cover art never really appealed to me because there was like this giant Mexican skeleton on the cover, and I don't get it. But I picked up System Shock at Costco, and I've not looked back.
You know, there you go. The guy who voiced Grim Fandango is Tony Plana. He also played Ugly Betty's father.
Huh? Look at that.
But you know what? I have two copies of Grim Fandango somewhere in my apartment, and I'll probably, if you want, I can dig one up and send it to you. And then you can download the software.
It's a very fun looking game.
And also, the dialogue is really, really smart too.
I'm hesitant to do things like that because, as I mentioned a moment ago, System Shock was around the same era. And when I was in grad school, you know, getting my degree in game design, I went to go play that again, and I had to jump through a whole bunch of hoops to get my, you know, my modern PC to think it was a, you know, circa 97 machine. And it worked okay up until I got to the final battle, and the modifications were based on something about the processor speed at the time. And so really the battle, which was originally planned to take, I don't know, like 4 minutes, you know, based on the speed of the processors back in the day, really gave you about 4.5 seconds. So it was quite literally unbeatable with the modification.
You know,
because modern processors are so much faster.
There's also a Let's Play without any commentary for Grim Fandango because the dialogue is that good. So if you just want to watch it as a movie, you know, you can do that too.
I could probably find that on YouTube if I really wanted to.
Yeah. And continuing, I'm obviously looking forward to Uncharted 4, although we still don't know much about the title. I really like the first three titles in the series, and I don't believe Naughty Dog will screw the pooch on this one. Get it? Get it? Despite the internal turmoil. I didn't pay much attention to the hardware presented at E3, and I also don't care about things like Powers or the Halo TV series, so I'm not going to comment on those. You know, they only really touched on the Steven Spielberg thing in that they said that Halo 5 would be released at the same time as the Steven Spielberg Halo series. So, anyways, we're going to move on to the next one. Take it away, Jordan.
from Alpha Shard. Hey guys, thanks for reporting on E3. I have to admit that Little Big Planet 3 and Uncharted 4 are the pulls for me to get that system. At PC Master Race, I always have to laugh when I hear this. I myself don't feel snobbish about it. I know I've said it before, I just don't feel the consoles have done much to bring me back to them. This E3 may change that with some games for the PS4. However, I can't imagine finding a first-person perspective game with a gamepad. The movements are always too slow and clunky, and aiming is a pain, whereas I enjoy using a gamepad for platformers and such. I also love the ability to mod various games, which you can't do on a console. Question of the week: as I mentioned above, Sony is releasing some games that my family and I are interested in playing, so Sony has piqued our interest again with this showing. Also, the kickstarted game Pillars of Eternity showed there as well, not all companies are staying the course, as Paul said.
Wow, you know, I did not know that, because you know, I did see Shroud of the Avatar, which is where I met Richard Garriott. But I asked Chris Avalon if he was going to be at E3. He said no. So it was probably other people at Obsidian that would be there. But I'm really interested, because that's the one Kickstarter game I spent a bundle on. You know what? I backed it with $175.
Wow. And that's a lot for a Kickstarter game.
Yeah. Well, you know what? it had the perks that I wanted. So
there you go.
Well, did I ever say that Kickstarter games were staying the course? I think I'm being taken out of context if I'm going to, you know, protect myself from this character assassination.
Stay the course. Stay the course.
I also live in the U.S., so I guess qualifying for the swag bag, my wife loves The Sims. I forgot to respond to the part about Beyond Earth Tech Web. I wanted to add that all the previous Civ games we've had had a fairly straightforward tech tree. All Civs will research the same text, and it's just a race to get those texts. The web is designed to make it so that not all the texts will be researched by any given Civ, but they will focus on one section for their faction.
Yeah, the other thing I said to Alpha Shard was that a lot of times you'd have a bottleneck in which, you know, there's only one or two techs, so you had no choice in the tech. And for those who don't understand, if you didn't hear it last week, the new tech tree is actually a spider web, so you're in the middle, and it branches out like a spider's web, so you can go in any direction you want, so it's a little bit more free than having to go in a single line with branches on it.
Picture Final Fantasy X.
But I can't, because I never played it.
Well, then that was your loss. Get with the program.
Okay, go ahead, Paul.
From Kenneth via TMR Zoo, Metal Gear Solid 5, The Phantom Pain, was jaw-dropping and probably has the best visuals in the industry right now. MSG looks to have the gameplay to back it up with an impenetrable story, trademark humor, and some of the best stealth gaming there is.
I will say that
the opinions of Kenneth are not exactly those.
This is actually
podcast
from tmrzoo.com, which actually hosts one of a podcast as well. I mean, we have gaming podcasts in it. We have gamestooge.com, but we also have TMR Zoo, which also posts the podcast. So yeah, it's a new era to get a letter from. Metal Gear Solid 5 did look really, really good, especially the close-ups. It had that sort of plastic doll sheen that a lot of PlayStation 4, or at least PlayStation lead developed games have. If you notice, like in just The Last of Us.
The PlayStation 3 games were particularly bad about that. They kind of had a weird silvery sheen to them.
But I was fairly impressed by Metal Gear Solid 5. And, you know, the thing is, I do not like that series. I find the stories to be baffling and badly written. You know, and the stealth
never
really
impressed.
Yes, but
you don't like anything. You're a curmudgeon.
Oh, stop it. The stealth never really impressed me. But this game seems like it's taking a lot of what it learned from the portable game. You know, I forgot. It's not Portable Ops. It's Peace Walker.
Peace Walker, yeah.
And it's expanding the gameplay. So it's actually on my radar. So we'll see about Metal Gear Solid 5.
I'll just wonder if there's, by the time it comes out, if there's going to be any bad taste over the $30 demo that they released this year.
Oh, there's still bad taste. And you know, the funny thing is that the demo, according to people who, what's it called? They said that people who went to see the demo at E3 said that it actually, you know, took away some of that bad taste already. I never bought the demo, so I don't have any of the bad taste in my mouth.
Right.
I never pay for demos, just so you know. If you're paying for it, it's not a demo.
Nobody should be paying for demos. That's correct.
Well, what about Gran Turismo 5 Prologue? Didn't they have two demos? Didn't they release two paid demos for that game?
I think they did, yeah.
Yeah. Anyways, the question of the week is still the question of the week from last week, because we have one more week of the swag bag giveaway, and it is, what was your biggest takeaway from E3? So if you didn't answer this week, you can answer last week. It's not too late to get a swag bag.
I have an addendum to what I said last week, what my takeaway was from E3.
Okay.
So my takeaway was that Sony doesn't really care about the Vita anymore. And since the last podcast, they actually confirmed it. Shuhei Yoshida was quoted on a bunch of different gaming sites. I'm looking at VG247 when he said, instead of watching big stories or cinematics, you can spend hours on the Vita. So I think that's actually the biggest star to help provide great content to the Vita going forward. And we continue to make games, cross-platform games, especially on the digital side. And then they asked him if that means that there's going to be less first-party titles on the Vita. Yoshida replied, I would say yes, that's correct.
Ouch.
So there are no first-party titles right now. Somehow there's going to be fewer than zero.
Wasn't that a name of a novel in a movie, Less Than Zero?
Actually, I think, a song on Sesame Street or Square One or one of those shows about Less Than Zero.
Yeah, look for our show notes at GamingPodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. We enjoy our feedback. See those comments at our blog at GamingPodcast.net. Also, hit us up at Facebook.com/GamingPodcast or the forums at GamingPodcast.net/forum, or send us your comments to fans@GamingPodcast.net. You can also check out our gaming news at GameStudio.com. Also, subscribe to us on iTunes and leave us some iTunes comments. We need the iTunes comments, you know.
Woohoo, comments.
Yeah, so like I said, the contest is going on for another week, and I will announce the winner next week. And, you know, it's a nice swag bag. I'll see if I can't get extra stuff in it so it's really bulging.
I'm going to refrain from comment.
About a bulging swag bag?
Yep.
Wait, have you worn your Sims t-shirt yet?
I have not worn my Sims t-shirt.
Is it still wrapped in plastic?
Yes, it is.
Oh, okay.
I have not been to the gym. I find that, you know, free shirts make a great gym shirt.
Oh, okay. So you're going to sweat into it.
Yes.
Oh, you know what?
Recent back injury.
You know, the funny thing is that Sims do work out. So I wonder if you're working on the Sims shirt, a little green diamond will appear above you and slowly get red as you start sweating.
That would be so awesome.
Anyways, we will see you next week.
Good night, everybody.
Bye, Bonds.